Coming up for New Year's Eve, we'll hear the short story, The Cannoneers. But first, a few words from its author, Richard Zaff.
It came from two sources. One of them is that in Gloucester, there's a house called the Cannonball House. And apparently during the Revolution, the British took exception to the rebel views of the people that owned the house, and they had a small sloop mounted with a couple of cannons and sailed down the Annisquam River and put a couple of rounds into the house, and the house still had displays, I guess, on its mantle, like one of the cannonballs, which survived the attack. And the other is a story about a friend that actually built a cannon. And this coalesced into what happens when you have a newly made cannon, gunpowder, a cannonball, New Year's, and a bottle of whiskey. Of course, the part of the story is what happens to that cannonball in the end, and where does it end up? One of these things, guns and liquor, what could possibly go wrong?
After driving 2 hours from Massachusetts to the main coast, Kurt stretched to get the kinks out of his back. Ice edged the shore where the sea lapped against the rocks, and the gravel beach in the cove crunched under his boots as he made his way to the cottage. He looked across to the other side and saw most of the cottages lit up and ready to celebrate the new year. When he opened the door, a blast of hot air and the smell of wood burning in the fireplace with the aroma of food from the kitchen greeted him. Other guests were already in groups holding drinks and chatting, and Kurt held an iron ball about 2 inches in diameter in his hand. "What's that?" asked Mark as he leaned back on the couch, taking a cookie from a plate offered by their host. "It's a cannonball," Kurt said, and he tossed it to Mark. "It has a nice weight to it. Where'd you get it?" as Mark rolled it from hand to hand. "It's the oddest thing. I found it in my girlfriend's garden in Gloucester. It looks to be the real thing. You know, there's a house up the Annisquam River called the Cannonball House. Apparently the Brits took exception to the owner's rebel leanings during the Revolution, and to express their displeasure, well, they sailed into the river and put a round in the house. I found this one down the street. It just might fit." Mark reached over, unfolded a blanket, exposing a bronze cannon barrel about 3 feet long, and placed it on the living room floor. "And I brought this along to bring in the new year. She's a beauty. By the look of her, she's a swivel gun," said Kurt, as he lifted the cannon and looked in the muzzle. "You've got a discerning eye. She's been my part-time project for the past year or so. She's still a virgin, so tonight's the night," said Mark. "By the looks of it, you didn't have a cast. So where'd you get a hunk of bronze like that?" "Marine salvage. I was there for a customer who wanted antique winches for an old boat that he was restoring, and a solid bronze prop shaft out of an old wreck was lying on the floor. Somebody said it was probably from an old Liberty ship, but nobody knows. I couldn't resist." Kurt took the cannonball back from Mark, and he hefted the cannon and dropped the ball down the muzzle and rolled down the barrel, and he heard a pleasing clunk as the ball stopped against the breech. Then he tilted the barrel, and the ball rolled back into his hand. "With a little wadding," he said, "should work perfectly." "You're crazy," said Mark, raising an eyebrow. "I'm not going to do that." "What do you mean? You're the best machinist I know. And besides, just examining the muzzle, I couldn't help but notice that you sweated a steel sleeve in the barrel. So what could possibly go wrong?" "Well, if there's a fault near the breech, the entire gun could explode, spraying shrapnel all over creation, killing any bystanders. That's what," said Mark, taking the cannon from Kurt. "Did you see any faults when you built that thing?" "Of course not," said Mark as he wrapped the cannon in the blanket. "I would have canned the whole mess if I found any faults." "Well, see, there you go. You just answered your own question. Safe as can be. I just happened to bring some leather grease patches to wrap the ball in. It'll be no problem. Besides, you're the best machinist I know. The answer is, you're crazy. And no. Furthermore, I might add that I'm the only machinist you know." Kurt took a bottle from under his coat, placed it on a nearby table, and said, "Well, in that case, we can drown our sorrows in a bottle of John Powers I happen to have. It's known to increase one's judgment and wisdom." By 11:45, John Powers was a dead soldier, rolling around on the floor. Kurt and Mark had augmented their whiskey intake with a few beers, some hors d'oeuvres, and a helping of seafood casserole. Mark had the cannon propped up with cushions on the porch since he couldn't find a place to mount the swivel to aim the cannon. He had loaded her with a 35-millimeter film canister full of black powder and inserted a 22 blank cartridge into the priming hole on top of the breech. At the stroke of 12, he jerked the lanyard. The hammer came down, and the cannon let out a lively report that echoed around the cove. The salute was followed by shaking hands, hugging, and kissing, which were associated with bringing in the new year. Then coffee was served to most of the guests, while Mark and Kurt decided to stay with the beer. By 1 in the morning, the party had thinned out to just a few stalwarts. Kurt sent across from Mark, tossing the ball, then rolling it in his hand. "Well," he said, "no. Did I ever tell you that even though you're my oldest and best friend, I still don't trust you?" said Mark, as he took a swig from a beer bottle, shaking his head. "Well, that's unfair. I've always looked after your interests." Kurt spread his hands and rolled the cannonball from hand to hand as he stuck out his lower lip, suggesting that Mark had hurt his feelings. "Really? I seem to remember the time that you dragged me off skiing with no lessons and convinced me to go down a Black Diamond Trail. Then there was that stupid clapped-out boat you bought. No wonder the guy you bought her from named her Solid Waste." "Come on. You came out just fine both times," said Kurt, with an upbeat tone. "Except I almost broke my neck skiing, and the ski patrol had to take me off the mountain wrapped up like a mummy in one of their sleds. And that boat broke down in the middle of Cape Cod Bay. I remember we spent a miserable night bobbing around in the rain. At least your mother had the presence of mind to call the Coast Guard. Oh, and the humiliation of having to be towed into Gloucester Harbor. Details, details. I've got everything figured out. We'll set the cannon up down on the beach. There's a big old tree stump that's easily over 2 feet in diameter. We'll point her at the stump. And in an unlikely event that the ball makes it through, it'll wind up in the cove. No harm done." And Kurt smiled hopefully. "You know you want to do it." And in a few minutes, the two of them sat on the beach loading the cannon. "You know, it made a nice bang with one canister of powder," said Kurt. "But to propel the ball, I think we need to double or triple the amount of the charge." And he poured the third canister down the barrel and tamped it with a ramrod. Mark grabbed him by the collar and pulled him back. "I don't know why I'm doing this," he said. "But at least you should keep your head away from the muzzle while you tamp the powder. If the powder ignited, I'd have to explain to the cops why my now ex-friend has no head. The hard part would be explaining your demise to your mother. On second thought, maybe she'd be relieved with all the grief that you caused her over the past 35 years. And Kurt rammed the ball down the muzzle, wrapped in the grease patch next. "The fit is so snug that I had to press hard on the ramrod to seat the ball. And now the priming cap." "No, that's the last thing we do, moron. We don't want her to go off prematurely. First, we sight her and have everything set. Then the cap," said Mark. And he scooped out some sand and set the barrel in the depression so its entire length was buried except for the muzzle and the breech, where the primer and hammer were located. "Here, tie the extra line to the lanyard and run the line behind the sand burn. And when you're all set, call me. Whatever you do, don't jerk the line, because I'll be inserting the primer." And Kurt ran the line behind the berm, 10 feet up the shore, while Mark, hovering over the cannon, continued to make adjustments. Then the hammer came down with a snap, but Mark had put his hand between the hammer and the priming hole. "Hey, stupid, I told you not to jerk the line." "Oh, right, sorry, I forgot, and the lanyard got tangled, so I gave it a jerk to clear it." Mark took a deep breath and sighed. "Look, drop the line and don't touch it while I'm inserting the primer. You're not touching it, are you?" he said, with an aggravated tone. "No," came the response. Mark inserted the 22 blank in the breech and scampered behind the berm next to Kurt. "Fire," he said, and Kurt pulled the lanyard as they covered their ears and buried their faces in the sand, and the cannon went off with a pleasing bang that echoed all across the cove. "That was fun," said Kurt, waving his hand to clear the dense smoke that had drifted back. "Too bad we don't have more powder and another ball." With the explosion still ringing in Mark's ears, he shook his head to improve his hearing. Still, he had to shout to hear himself speak. I think that's enough for tonight. If we fired it again, we'd probably have a division of Marines at the front door. And when they crawled back over the berm, they saw the cannon smoking, having recoiled several inches. When Mark picked it up, the barrel was hot to touch, and he examined it as best he could in the dark. Well, it looks like she's okay, but I'll know more when we get her back to the shop. Holy cow! Will you look at this, said Kurt, as he panned his flashlight over the tree stump. The ball struck it squarely and exploded the whole thing. I can't believe what a mess it made. There's nothing left but toothpicks. Yeah, you can see the track the ball made. It looks like someone parted the wood with a hairbrush. I wonder where the ball went. And Mark kicked at the gravel on the beach, hoping to find the ball. Nothing but splinters remained, spread out in a fan-like pattern caused by the shock wave that pointed to the cove and cabins on the other side. Later that morning, Mark, Kurt, and the other guests headed to the local VFW post, which had a tradition of serving a pancake breakfast every New Year's Day. Kurt and Mark sat, downing several cups of coffee while nursing hangovers, made tolerable by a generous dose of aspirin. And they couldn't help hearing the conversation at the adjacent table, where a gray-haired woman rummaged about in her handbag until she extracted the cannonball wrapped in a dust cloth. I found it on her back porch this morning, she told the woman seated with her. Jack said he thinks it's a cannonball. I can't imagine where it came from. Someone may have thrown it on the porch as a joke, because there's a dent in the siding under the window facing the cove. I didn't hear anything since our bedroom's on the other side of the house, but Jack said he heard a bang loud enough to startle the dog, and she rolled it across the table for all to see. Her two friends leaned forward to examine it, but as they had never played second base or shortstop, the ball eluded them, rolling off the table and landing on the floor with a thump, and it continued to roll until it came to rest under Kurt and Mark's table. Kurt froze and looked at Mark, who put his elbows on the table and held his head in his hands, murmuring, "Yet another Kurt-inspired misadventure. When will I ever learn?" Then he leaned down and retrieved the cannonball. "Do you know what this might be?" the woman asked. Mark knitted his brow, examined the ball as if he'd never seen it before, and said, "It could be a large ball bearing, but the age suggests that it might be something else." "Like a cannonball?" suggested Kurt enthusiastically. Kurt wilted under Mark's icy stare. Mark turned to the woman and her two friends and said, "My friend here told me that there is a house in Gloucester called the Cannonball House that has a ball just like this. I'd treasure this if I were you because it looks like a genuine antique." And he smiled and placed the ball in a saucer on the woman's table so that it wouldn't roll away. "My friend knows all about such things, and maybe he can enlighten you. Myself, I've got to head back to Massachusetts, so I need to get rolling." And he tipped his hat to the ladies and tapped Kurt in the shoulder. "Catch you later, buddy. It's been an interesting start to the new year."